Are there any voyagers among you? Those eager and curious who would journey through time and space and remember what they have seen? If so, the invitation is extended. And the promise, this: to look upon the face of the past.
This is Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. Stories out of that great fabric of visions, struggles, and accomplishments of the American past. Stories of our inheritance.
Come with us now to Independence Hall, Philadelphia. You are standing in the white-paneled council chamber where the Constitutional Convention met in 1789. Look at the empty table before you and the polished empty chairs, left the way the delegates remember them on that memorable May so very long ago. Nothing's changed very much. Outside the high sunny windows on Chestnut Street, perhaps you can hear the traffic. You wander over to the chair where Washington sat. It all looks very still. Step back a few paces. There, that's right. Stand very quietly. You are not as alone as you may believe. Strain your ears a bit now, out Chestnut Street way. Do you hear anything? It sounds a little different, doesn't it? Good. Now, listen again.
Looks like a stormy session for the convention today, eh, Mr. Madison?
We've weathered storms before, have we not, General Washington?
More storms than I can think of, Mr. Madison.
Close your eyes a moment. That's right. Now, listen closely. Now, open your eyes and tell me what you see. Look to the left. There's Benjamin Franklin, 83, carried to the convention hall in a sedan chair, but here, nevertheless. Look around you. You may recognize some of the others. There's Hamilton, short, dapper, energetic. Perhaps you recognize more. Pinckney of South Carolina, Robert Morris of Pennsylvania, William Livingston of New Jersey, Rufus King of Massachusetts. Jefferson is in Paris, but we'll hear from him later.
The convention will come to order, gentlemen.
Men gathered to form a nation. What kind will it be? Where will the common man fit in? Or won't he? Listen, you've got these words in your pocket right now.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights.
Men created equal.
These are life,
inherent and unalienable rights. Where did these thoughts come from? These mighty, positive concepts of liberty, freedom, and human dignity. So new in a political state that they left the rest of the world aghast. You look at the chairs and wonder, just what miracle had these men done? How easy was it to guarantee that the man on the street could go to any church or synagogue he wished and not have to look over his shoulder? How easy was it? Or how tough was it? It had its real beginning in 1620 when off the Massachusetts coast, a little ship named the Mayflower lay off Cape Cod. While below decks, her passengers made this compact before entering the New World.
Having undertaken for the glory of God the voyage to plant the first colony in Massachusetts, we do solemnly combine ourselves together into a civil body politic for our better ordering and preservation, and to frame such just and equal laws from time to time as shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general good of the colony.
And so they signed. John Carver, Samuel Fuller, Thomas Rogers, William Bradford, and the others. And later, when they landed, Bradford wrote in his diary,
"Being thus arrived in a good harbor and brought safe to land, we fell upon our knees and blessed the God of heaven who had brought us over the vast and furious ocean and delivered us from all the perils and miseries thereof.
Think you stand upon a promontory now, on the coast of Maine. Strain your eyes and look out to sea. Those are masts and sails, little ships coming over the great curve of ocean to shores dream-swept by the waves. Look down the coast and inland, if you will. There's the new colony of Massachusetts, 4,000 people it boasts in this year of 1634. Watch the ships enter the port of Boston and watch the towns grow. Charlestown, Roxbury, Lynn, Dorchester. The little colony now dominates the entire Atlantic coast. Who are the men who govern them? Cotton Mather, John Endicott, John Cotton, John Winthrop, Puritan governor from England. How are they governed? The preacher, Cotton Mather, puts it quite directly.
It is better that the commonwealth be fashioned to the setting of God's house, which is his church, than to accommodate the church to the commonwealth.
Here the Puritan church and the commonwealth were one. The laws of the Puritan church were the laws of the people. But now, a personal question, please. Are you Puritan by faith? Fine. You will enjoy listening to the sermons, and you will worship in your little white church and live in order, perhaps in Salem, perhaps somewhere in the snug hills. And you will till your land and nurse the Indian corn to maturity and love your wife and keep a sharp eye out for Indians and witches. But now you ask a question. What happens if you live in Massachusetts and are a separatist, a Quaker, a Jew, or a Catholic, and wish to practice your faith? It isn't pretty, but listen anyway.
Anne Hutchinson, you are hereby banished from the colony of Massachusetts for preaching views contrary to the Puritan Church.
Shocked you? Keep listening.
John Wheelwright, you are to leave this colony forever. Your doctrine offends Puritan ears. Any Quaker who was once banished shall be put to death if he returns to this colony.
And some returned, and some died. Here are their names. William Robinson, Marmaduke Stevenson, Mary Dyer, William Ledra. And this is the roll call. Over 40 banished, 64 imprisoned, 1 branded, 3 with their ears cut off, and 4 put to death. In New Amsterdam, later to be New York, they had their religion. And old peg-legged Stuyvesant had a thing or two to say.
Lutherans in this colony may not hold meetings. Any clergyman conducting worship except within the established church shall be fined £100.
To which he added,
no Jews from this state on shall be permitted to enter New Netherlands.
To which he added,
any Roman Catholic priest who enters this colony shall be hanged.
This was the dismal heritage. Intolerance, unrelief. What started out to be a dream turned for some into a nightmare. Does it offend your ears? Does your spine tingle a bit? Think of those chairs in Independence Hall again. We will pause a moment while you give your thanks. From all this, 2 things happened. Men began to think, and men began to act. Roger Williams, imprisoned for his heresies, escaped, making his way through the snows of a New England January to Narragansett Bay, where in freedom and liberty, he founded the colony of Rhode Island. What were his heresies? Listen.
God requireth not a uniformity of religion. All individuals and religious bodies, pagan, Jew, Catholics as well as Protestants, are entitled to religious liberty and natural rights.
The Reverend Thomas Hooker and a band of settlers left to establish Hartford, and the followers of Anne Hutchinson founded a new haven. And there were echoes. Echoes in Maryland, where Lord Baltimore recognized that the freedom of conscience is the right of every man. And a little later in Pennsylvania, a straight-thinking gentleman by the name of William Penn put it into the books officially.
Because the happiness of mankind depends so much upon the enjoying of liberty of their conscience, I, William Penn, do hereby grant that no person inhabiting this province shall be in any case molested or prejudiced because of his persuasion or practice.
The forces which were to do battle on this continent had met, and the outcome would determine the fate of your children's children. Now, a question. How did the scale turn? How did your inheritance of freedom come about? How did these people get together so that you and your neighbors can live together? Listen as the years march by.
1648.
The New England colonies sign a compact transcending religion to join together in defense against the Mohawk tribes. People begin to forget to ask the religious persuasion of the neighbor who came to help. And if a woman could load a musket, it mattered little the neighborhood of her church.
1691.
The Massachusetts theocracy is ended as a new charter from England makes the Commonwealth a royal colony.
1730.
12,000 French and 12,000 Indians begin their raids on the frontiers, bringing to the colonies a realization of the need for unity, regardless of religion.
1754.
In Albany, a printer named Benjamin Franklin calls for colonial union.
1763.
The colonies now total 1,800,000 persons, getting along with one another because they had to. And because something new was in the wind. Something that has a whisper to it. And the whisper said, freedom. The Englishmen, the Puritans, the Scots Presbyterians, the Germans, the Irish Catholics, the Quakers, the Jews, all began to discover that they had a common corpuscle in their blood. And then certain events occurred which made that blood run red.
Whereas dangerous commotions and insurrections have been fomented and raised in the town of Boston, in which certain valuable cargoes of tea, being the property of the East India Company, were seized and destroyed, it is decreed that the port of Boston shall be henceforth closed.
There is a whisper in the winds, a whisper of a free people on a free earth, worshiping God and living in their own free way. There is a whisper as the winds blow and make the lanterns in the tower of the old North Church creak slowly on their hinges. A whisper making its way to the villages, farmhouses, the mantles where the muskets hang. A whisper heard by Howe as he paced the quarterdeck and eyed his squadron lying in the waters outside Boston. A whisper spreading up to King's Mountain and Allen's green-clad men, building with the winds until the whisper became a voice. In Philadelphia, certain representatives questioned a leading citizen of Philadelphia and got some leading answers.
What's your name and place of abode?
Benjamin Franklin of Philadelphia.
What was the temper of America towards Great Britain before the year 1763?
The best in the world.
And what is their temper now?
Very much altered.
If the Stamp Act should be repealed, would it induce the Americas to acknowledge the rights of Parliament to tax them?
No, never. They will never do it unless compelled by force of arms.
Mm-hmm. What used to be the pride of the Americans?
To indulge in the fashions of the old world.
What is now their pride?
To wear their old clothes till they can make new ones.
There were powder stores at Concord. There was a bridge. And there was a shot. And it was heard around the world. The issues are neither black nor white. The English colonies enjoyed greater freedom than any colonial possession on earth. But there was something in the blood that could not be denied. Freedom. And now all the Quakers, Puritans, Catholics, Jews, Baptists, Presbyterians joined together. The beginning was ended. But now a greater miracle began. Out of all the noise and shouting, out of all the confusion, there was a new opportunity on earth. A chance for liberty and personal freedom for its own sweet sake. And for the first time in history, there was a place to try it. France had a revolution, and they got Napoleon. Russia had a revolution, and they got a police state. America had a revolution, and you got liberty. Not for one person or group, but for all. What thoughts united these 13 colonies? What thoughts were so powerful they could transcend sects and build a nation where men could act as brothers? Think now that in our studio, these very men of Philadelphia are present. Washington, Franklin, Jefferson. Think they await your questions to be answered as best they can. Now, please, this is no trick to fool you, nor do we wish to mislead. These men are long buried, and this side of heaven there is no reprieve from the grave. And yet, though actors will speak their lines, they are with us today no less than our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and our country. Think only that we have added voice to the spirit. Not words, mind you, for the words they will speak are eternally their own. Exactly what they once said or wrote. Our additions are but an occasional gesture or two. Now, if it would please our guests, I would like to introduce them. Ladies and gentlemen, General George Washington.
Good evening.
Dr. Benjamin Franklin.
I bid you good evening.
And Mr. Thomas Jefferson.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we are honored by your presence tonight. Now, may we ask you this? In framing the Constitution for a new nation during those days in Philadelphia, how did the rights of men to live and worship as they please enter into your thinking?
If you'll please,
Dr. Franklin?
Most men, as well as most sects and religions, think themselves...
Dr. Benjamin Franklin, ladies and gentlemen.
...of all truth, that whenever others differ from them, it is error. Many private persons think almost as highly of their own infallibility as that of their sect. But few express it so naturally as a certain French lady who, in a dispute with her sister, said, "I don't know how it happens, sir, but I meet with nobody but myself that's always in the right."
Mr. Jefferson.
Sir, the rights of conscience we never submitted. We could not submit. We are answerable for them to our God. Now, the legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as they are injurious to others. But it does me no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods, or no God. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg.
I would like to add to that.
Please, General Washington.
The government of the United States of America is in no sense founded on the Christian religion. The United States is not a Christian nation any more than it is a Jewish or a Mohammedan nation.
True, very true. An eloquent preacher is said to have exclaimed aloud...
Mr. Jefferson.
...that he did not believe that there was a Quaker, Presbyterian, Methodist, or Baptist in heaven. He added that in heaven God knew no distinctions, but considered all good men as his children and as brethren of the same family. I believe, with the Quaker preacher, that he who steadily observes those moral precepts in which all religions concur will never be questioned at the gates of heaven as to the dogmas in which they all differ.
Certainly. All possess alike liberty of conscience...
General Washington, ladies and gentlemen.
...and immunities of citizenship. For happily, the government of the United States, which gives bigotry no sanction, persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens in giving it on all occasions their effectual support.
May I add something?
Do, Franklin.
Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech and worship, which is the right of every man who does not hurt or control the right of another. Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freeness of speech and worship.
Agreed, by all means. All men should be free to profess their opinions in matters of religion, and it shall in no way diminish, enlarge, or affect their civil capacities.
The liberty of worshiping God agreeably and according to his conscience is not only among men's choicest blessings, but also his rights.
Hearing the general speak, I'm reminded what I heard about Washington in France when I was ambassador there. They used to say, "You will know and enjoy what posterity will say of Washington, for 1,000 leagues have nearly the same effect with 1,000 years.
Yes. Thank you, Franklin. However, I do not think we are more inspired, have more wisdom, or possess more virtue than those who will come after us.
I think we shall never be without a sufficient number of wise and good men to undertake and execute well our tasks.
And I think of what Tom Paine said. He said, freedom hath been hunted round the globe. Asia and Africa have long expelled her. Parts of Europe regard her like a stranger. To Americans, I say, receive the fugitive and prepare in time an asylum for mankind.
As mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protection of civil government. I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations in examples of justice and liberality.
Yes, for all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with inherent and unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Amen. And as a philosopher, I would like to say that all among us may be happy who have happy dispositions. A happy disposition is necessary to happiness even in paradise. May your concept be lived out forever, Mr. Jefferson.
I was bred into the law, Mr. Franklin. That gave me a view of the dark side of humanity. Then I read poetry to qualify it with a gaze on its bright side.
May I add something?
Gentlemen, I'm afraid our time is running out. Would you, General, like to say a few closing words?
Thank you. I view with unspeakable pleasure that harmony and brotherly love which characterizes the clergy of different denominations in this as in other parts of the United States, exhibiting to the world a new and interesting spectacle, at once the pride of our country and the surest basis of universal harmony.
Thank you, General Washington. Mr. Jefferson.
Yes. No experiment can be more interesting than that which we are now trying, which we trust will end in establishing the fact that man may be governed by reason and truth.
Thank you, Mr. Jefferson. Dr. Franklin, would you close for us?
God grant that not only the love of liberty, but a thorough knowledge of the rights of man may pervade all the nations of the earth, so that a philosopher may set his foot anywhere on its surface and say, "This is my country."
Philadelphia, 1789. The convention is over. The earth has trembled. The delegates file out. Franklin, Pinckney, Morris, Livingston, King, and many more. And there, written on the parchment, lies a testament to the belief in man, the Constitution. A message to all who will see that the thought that man might govern himself with dignity and decency has been stamped
and signed and delivered. It is quiet once again in the white-paneled council chamber in the Independence Hall, Philadelphia. Outside on Chestnut Street, the carriages have vanished once again into the past. The delegates have left. The traffic is resumed. The moment is over. O God of Philadelphia and Bethlehem, who hath made white and clean the birches of New England, who hath hewn the great red canyons of the West and taught rain to fall upon the plains, God of Moses and Washington, God of Franklin and Paul of Tarsus, grant that these men have not worked in vain, what the fair hour is but prelude to the future, that their thoughts, so framed in justice, may pervade until the end of time, so that in all corners of the earth, man may look upon his brother and say, I am unafraid.
You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from the National Adjutant of the American Legion, Mr. Henry H. Dudley.
We have just heard words of wisdom uttered by Americans many years ago, the words of early Americans who founded a free nation under God. The spirit of these words is our inheritance. Have we spent our inheritance or have we preserved it? Is the love of liberty alive in our land today? Do Americans still respect each other's religious beliefs? Are we still a government of the people, by the people, and for the people? I submit to you that we have preserved our inheritance of freedom. As National Adjutant of the American Legion, I should like to use the Legion as an example to demonstrate some of the freedoms enjoyed by organizations and individuals in America today. The American Legion is composed of nearly 3 million men and women who have served the cause of freedom in time of war. It is a politically nonpartisan organization. At election time, it sponsors a Get Out the Vote campaign, which has as a slogan, Vote as you please, but please vote. Its members are of varying ages. They have many occupations. They are of different races and religious persuasions. Their annual Back to God telecast presents a Catholic priest, a Jewish rabbi, and a Protestant minister. Taking advantage of a freedom guaranteed by the Bill of Rights, the right to assemble, members of the American Legion meet in national convention and, availing themselves of another American privilege, freedom of speech, they express their views and aims. I have used an organization which I represent to illustrate that ours is still the land of the free. The rights and privileges I have described, however, are realities for every citizen of this land. May it always be so. That Americans, hundreds of years in the future, may still gratefully and proudly count the blessings of our American inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Dudley. Next week, Inheritance will again take you on a journey through the pages of American history. Today's script, The Vanguard, was written by Robert S. Greene. The words of Washington, Jefferson, and Franklin were taken verbatim from their speeches or writings. Special music was composed and conducted by Roy Shield. Featured in the cast was Bert Cowlin as a narrator. Others included Edwin Jerome, Roger DeCoven, Robert Carroll, Gene Leonard, William Griffiths, Chester Stratton, John Stanley, Joseph Boland, and Matt Crowley. Inheritance was supervised by William Welch and directed by Edward King.
Enjoy variety entertainment on the Dennis Day Show tonight over most NBC radio stations.